Welcome to What She Said. I'm your host, Candace Sampson. It's another full week at What She Said with interviews that empower, educate, and entertain. So let's jump in right now. It's Thanksgiving across the country, and as we kick off today's show, I want to take a minute to let you know how grateful I am for you and for all the incredible guests who join me here in this space. I am deeply thankful for the stories shared here, and this week is, of course, no exception. Here's what's coming up. Truth and Reconciliation Day has passed and orange shirts have been packed away for another year. This does not mean we can move on, though. Only 10 of the 94 calls to actions from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission have been addressed, which means activism needs to be less performative and more constructive. Samantha Krishnapillai from On Canada Project joins me to share what that should look like. Thanksgiving will not be a happy occasion for over a million Canadians this year as inflation forces more and more people to seek relief from Canada's food banks. Food insecurity and hunger is at an all-time high, and food banks are stretched to help support soaring demand. Kirsten Beardsley, CEO of Food Banks Canada, wants all Canadians to know that food alone will not solve hunger and food insecurity in Canada, and shares how we can all get involved to help our neighbors and communities. Anne Brody pops in with enough new entertainment to get you through a long weekend and the anticipated turkey coma. Lena Dunham is back with a new show she wrote and directed on Amazon Prime called Catherine Called Birdie, which Anne says is a triumph of innovation and imagination. House of Hammer on Discovery takes a look at the family legacy of violence, abuse, drugs, and murder over generations in one of the world's wealthiest families. Plus, the Lincoln Project on Showtime, which takes a look at the fastest-growing super PAC in America as they take on the task of saving democracy and defeating their own party's sitting president. Midlife can be a crisis for some and a time of release for others, and all of that depends largely on your mindset going into it. Jennifer John from the Sacred Space Coaching pops by with some tips on moving through this time of life with intention and purpose so that you can write the best next chapter of your life. Who doesn't want to be a badass? Jennifer Cassetta wants to help you achieve that goal with her new book, The Art of Badassery, Unleash Your Mojo with Wisdom of the Dojo, and lays out how you can attain black belt status in your life with this easy-to-follow self-help book that helps you harness the wisdom, tools, and tactics Jennifer learned on the dojo mat. Finally, Vanessa Vaccaria, who is half of the rock duo Goodnight Sunrise, stops by to discuss their latest single, One Pill, before we play it for you in its entirety. Truth and Reconciliation Day is important, there is no doubt, but true reconciliation will require our sustained attention all year long. My next guest has some tips to keep us all moving in the right direction. Samantha Krishnapillai, founder of On Canada Project, aims to bridge information gaps on today's big issues by inviting people into critical conversations about the future of our country and the world. In the third of five interviews with What She Said, today we're taking a look at truth and reconciliation as a daily practice. Welcome back, Samantha.
Thanks so much for having me.
So Truth and Reconciliation just passed, and I mean, I was listening on the radio all day to stories. I was seeing people in my feed wearing their orange shirts. That's great. But, you know, as a society, we tend to shift quickly and move on, and we're on to the next thing. That's not how this should be working. So let's talk about it. Tell me about your thoughts on the orange shirt.
Yeah. So before we jump into the orange shirt, the first thing to remember is that colonialism isn't over. Like, it's not something that happened a long time ago. It remains really embedded in the legal, political, and economic context in Canada today. So what that means in practice is that the same values that allowed for colonization to happen, for residential schools to be created, for genocide to be committed across this landmass, all of that is still embedded within our legal, political, and economic context in Canada, even if not all of us are clued into that properly, and even if it's not as aggressive as it was back then. So that's why just having a day for national remembrance of truth and reconciliation isn't enough and why we need to keep doing it all the time. Something that we always say in our content is that wearing an orange shirt doesn't magically make you an ally. It's not even the beginning of what needs to be done, though it is an important way to signal to family and friends that you were taking this seriously. So if you wore an orange shirt, I'd ask you to think about what your next steps now are going to be, given that you do care about this enough to wear it. I think one of the things that we talk about on our grid is how do you show that allyship after September 30th? And I think it's about thinking about what issues you care about and how to center Indigenous voices in those issues. So with, you know, if you care about climate crisis, if you care about systemic racism, if you care about houselessness, if you care about wealth inequality, caring about those issues while still centering Indigenous voices and leadership is a great way to practice what your orange shirt means.
Yeah. And you know, on your grid on Instagram, you do have some things you can do beyond the orange shirt, you know, like emailing your MP, keeping their address saved so you can keep the pressure on, keep following up to make sure. These are all great tips. I want to talk a little bit, though, about something you talk about on your grid. And one of it is the words you use are Indian fatigue. Can you expand on what that is and what that means?
Yeah, so the term was first introduced to me by my friend Brent. He's the chief of the First Nations in Ontario called Serpent River. And it's like we always go quote unquote Indian fatigue, but it's this idea in which how quickly we move on from Indigenous people's stories if they end up making the news at all. And honestly, we see that with so many social issues that affect marginalized communities. For example, you know, like what had happened after we posted Black Squares, I'm still not completely sure. But essentially, something happens that makes people care. It makes people care about Indigenous justice in this case. And then it's all of a sudden gone. And we just don't hear it at all afterwards. That's, I think, quite exhausting for the people from that community. And in our post, we talk about how asking people to share their trauma, share what they've lived through, and then like ignoring them the next day is quite harmful. And that's often what happens on National Day for Truth and Reconciliation, or, you know, now Canada Day, like stuff like that. We bring attention to this issue and we get people to share, you know, what their lives were like on a reserve, what's been going on in for their families, what, you know, tell us about stories about your grandparents at residential schools. And then we're like, thank you so much. And we don't talk to them again for another 365 days. And I think that's really messed up. And it's centering the people watching the news versus people experiencing it, which is a mistake.
And let's talk about the media's responsibility in this then, because what you're saying is, you know, people rush out to find guests for that day, and then we can't find anything about it. We don't see headlines anymore. And there are a number of things that the pressure should be daily. So can you share some of those?
Yeah, well, one of the things that I would love to see happen is continued focus on the 94 calls to action and how nothing's getting really done. I know the big piece of criticism we hear when we say that is people say Trudeau has done more than Harper, but doing more is not doing enough. And what I feel like we should be doing is embedding Indigenous justice into all of the issues that we want to talk about. So, for example, if you're talking about the climate crisis, you can't talk about it without centering Indigenous voices. They're super connected in how they show up. If you're talking about mental health, Indigenous people have some of the highest rates of mental health issues because of the trauma that they've experienced and the human rights violations that they're still experiencing. When you talk about mental health crisis in Canada, talking about that, it's keeping that conversation going beyond just National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. And to be honest, if it was up to me and we could have, you know, ongoing coverage centering Indigenous voices throughout the year, I think on National Day for Truth and Reconciliation, we should be asking our elected officials to tell us how far they are getting on each and every one of these calls to action. Because what these calls to actions generally represent are gross violations of human rights. Like, our government is violating human rights. And because it's not happening to every single Canadian, it's not happening to every white person, we're ignoring it.
I want to talk a little bit about what it means then to be an active ally. My feeling is that people are good. We are overwhelmed currently with ongoing crises around the globe and at home. And people sometimes just, it's that freeze mentality. I don't know what to do. How can I help? So what are some actual steps people can do to ensure that the pressure remains on the government, that the media centers Indigenous voices, and that we move towards true reconciliation and we are not exhausting our Indigenous community with these ridiculous requests once a year?
Yeah. So one of the things that I'll start by saying is, like, keep showing your allyship. It doesn't matter if you care about it, but do nothing about it. So keep talking about it, keep sharing content about it, keep asking questions about it throughout the year. If it feels tiring to do that, good. Like, that's solidarity and allyship is not supposed to be comfortable. It's supposed to be something you do that's more than not for yourself. It's for somebody else. Like, that's what On Canada Project does. We talk about this throughout the year. The other thing I would say is talk to your employers. They have purchasing power. They have the ability to make decisions. Ask them how they practice truth and reconciliation beyond the email they send on National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. Ask them who they're hiring, who they're buying from, who their vendors are. Ask them to try doing business differently, to include Indigenous organizations and putting money back into those communities. If you're in school, you know, it's asking people to attribute teachings from that are Indigenous people's teachings to them properly. And it's keeping the pressure on your elected officials throughout the year by asking questions. So when you're, if you're seeing a news conference of a politician talking about how much he cares about climate justice and how much we need to change the way we're doing it, ask him if he supports the pipelines that are being put up across the country. If you see someone talking about access to housing, ask them what they're doing about communities that are unhoused, particularly Indigenous peoples. Keep bringing it up. Don't stop. Because when we put pressure as, like, everyday Canadians across this country, it forces the media, it forces our employers, and it forces our government to actually take action seriously and less performatively.
Exactly. I mean, these 94 recommendations and only 10 have been done is scandalous. And we need to be continuing to put the pressure on to make sure that we are getting through this really extensive list of things to move towards true truth and reconciliation. Samantha, thank you so much for joining me. You shared a lot on your Instagram recently about Truth and Reconciliation Day. So I encourage everybody to go over to On Canada Project on Instagram to get caught up and to read these actions they can take. You're going to be back next month. And thank you so much for joining me today. This was great.
Thank you for having me.
More of What She Said with Candace Sampson coming up.
Today's podcast is brought to you by New Roots Herbal. Roughly 1 in 3 Canadians are not getting enough magnesium, which can severely impact their health. Magnesium deficiency can cause muscle weakness, fatigue, headaches, insomnia, irritability, cramping, bloating, and more. Magnesium matters. New Roots Herbal offers a wide array of magnesium products, including HeartMag, ClarityMag, and Ultra Gentle Magnesium Biglycinate in capsules, as well as a delicious lemon-lime powder. Getting enough couldn't be easier. Available exclusively at quality health food stores. To ensure these products are right for you, always read and follow the label.
Welcome back to What She Said with Candace Sampson.
As Canadians get ready to gather for the first normal Thanksgiving in 3 years, Food Banks Canada is reminding us that food insecurity and hunger is at an all-time high, with food banks across Canada stretched to help support soaring demand. Kirsten Beardsley is Food Bank Canada's new CEO. Passionate about ending hunger in Canada and helping lead Food Banks Canada's response throughout the pandemic, Kirsten is now on a mission to help Canadians realize that food alone will not solve hunger and food insecurity in Canada. And we can all get involved to help our neighbors and communities right now. Welcome back to the show, Kirsten.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can you expand for me, please, and explain what you mean when you say food alone will not solve food insecurity?
Of course. So it's obviously critical that food is shared with folks who don't have access to what they need, healthy, nutritious meals, say they're going to share with their families. But at the end of the day, what's causing food insecurity in Canada, and what we're seeing is a soaring number of people needing food banks. Underlying this is not a lack of food. We have enough food in this country. What's underlying the soaring rates of food insecurity is poverty and it's low incomes. And right now, of course, it's that high cost of living where people simply can't stretch their dollars to put food on the table for their families and are turning to their communities in need. And so what we need to address these underlying root causes of food insecurity is as policy solutions. We need to address poverty in this country. And we really, quite frankly, need to decide that it's not acceptable that this number of people are going hungry in our country.
People who are not struggling with food insecurity right now, I know they hear these things and they think, well, what can I do? You know, I mean, aside from donating food at, you know, the grocery store at the checkout or donating to the food bank, are there letters we can write? Do you have a letter already sort of pre-written that people could sign? Where should people go?
Yeah, I mean, I think first of all, what I like to say is thank you to everyone who supports their local food banks. And I'm not here to suggest that that's not needed. Right now, food banks are seeing the highest level of need in our history, in our 40 plus years in Canada. This is the toughest time. So please, if you're in a position to support, it is critical, especially as we head into the holiday season, to support your local food bank. That said, what we really need also are people to care about this issue. We need people to educate themselves. So if you go to foodbankscanada.ca, learn more about how prevalent hunger is. And then it should be an election issue. So we know, I know there's a lot of municipal elections right now. Housing is a municipal issue. Housing is the number one cost for folks right now, and it displaces food. So when you've got to pay rent and you want a roof over your head, you're going to pay your rent at the expense of your food budget. And so it should be part of the conversation and pushing elected officials to care about it, no matter which government and which level. I think it is, I say it's a collective shame of Canada that we have this number of people relying on food banks every month.
And can you just give me some of those numbers a little bit, please?
Sure. So what we are seeing is a 20% jump last year over the pre-pandemic. We know there's a massive increase this year as well. We'll be releasing some of that information in the coming weeks. But it's 1.3 million visits to food banks every single month. That means, and you know what, when I say the numbers, what I want people to remember is that those are people behind those numbers. This is people in your kids' schools, in your community organizations, your neighbors. And it's also not just about what's happening today. When you've got kids who are chronically going to school without a meal in their bellies, they're not in a position to learn all that they need to learn. They can't join sports teams because they don't have the energy. This is about all the things that we need to make our country thrive. And obviously, we all need food to thrive. And it's the future that we're all depriving ourselves of, the possibilities that we're all depriving ourselves of if we don't have everyone in this country having access to food. So the numbers are shocking and alarming. And yet, what I want people to hear from me is that there are real human beings behind all of those numbers. I was in Winnipeg recently and we were answering the lines for people calling in to make appointments for the food bank. And I was so, it was heartbreaking. There was a mom who, she said, I'm just so embarrassed that I'd have to do this. It was heartbreaking, but obviously she was making the right choice for her and her family. But no one wants to go to a food bank, which is why we really need to address those underlying causes.
Yeah, you know, just even mentioning that, I can feel the tears stinging in my eyes because I hate the thought of people suffering like this right now. And it sounds very hopeless, but there is hope. And I know that you always come to the table with some hopeful news and messaging about this. So if you could share a little bit of that before we close out.
Absolutely, there is hope. There are food banks in every corner of this country. And for me, what's the magic of food banking is that it creates a place for communities to come together. it creates a place for people who have a little bit more to share that with people who are struggling. But also food banks are a movement. We have never taken our eyes off our responsibility, not only to feed people today, but to advocate for real change so that we can build the Canada that we all want to see, where everybody across this country has access to food. So I invite everyone to join us. We advocate all levels of government to make that change possible. And I really, truly believe I couldn't do this work if I didn't think change was possible. And actually that we're gonna be successful. I know that we can solve hunger. I know that we can build a Canada where no one goes hungry. And I just invite everyone to join us along that ride.
Well, you are absolutely the right person leading the charge on this, Kirsten. So thank you so much for joining me. I want people to be able to find out more. So just one more time, the website and the social channels, please.
Sure. We can find us anywhere at foodbankscanada.ca. And you can also go to foodbankscanada.ca and find your local food bank if you want to get more involved locally.
All right. Incredible. Thank you, Kirsten, so much for everything you do.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
It's the long weekend, so it's the perfect time to get caught up on some new entertainment. And joining me now with What You Don't Want to Miss is Anne Brody. Welcome, Anne.
Hello there, Candace. Nice long weekend. And my top recommendation is on Prime Video. It's called Catherine Called Birdie. And I might not have gone to it. It's about a 14-year-old living in 1320 or 1230, one of them. But it's by Lena Dunham. Now, she doesn't appear in it, but oh my God, the imagination, the innovation. So here's this girl. She's 14, played by Bella Ramsey, and her father is desperate to marry her off because he's run out of riches, and he's a lord, and he has a huge staff. So he brings in all these suitors from afar to come and woo her. One of them's Russell Brand. She gets rid of him. And so four or five come along and she gets rid of them all, but she can't escape when he decides that she must marry a guy called Shaggy Beard. And he looks like he smells and he looks like his name. So she's not happy with this. Now, this is a very independent minded girl back in the day when marriages were arranged and there were strict rules for girls. So she goes out, she plays and dances and carries on. And gets into trouble constantly, but because of her incredible wit and charm, she's very likable. And she's so sarcastic. But I think what got me most is how on earth did Dunham become so interested in medieval Britain? She's clearly done a lot of research and she knows a lot. It blew my mind. So, you know, it's a definite Catherine Called Birdie.
Yeah, the trailer was completely charming, and that time period, I'm fascinated with as well. One of my favorite books on Earth is the Pillars of the Earth, and that is based on that time period. So I'm totally into seeing this. Now, one of the ones you had on your list here was House of Hammer, and that looks scandalous.
Oh dear! Do you remember he was a huge star? Couple of years ago, huge star. He'd done Call Me By My Name. He was great as the Winklevoss twins in The Social Network. And then word came out from a couple of his victims that he had a very strange sexual proclivity, including the Japanese art of tying women and hanging them from the ceiling and blah, blah, blah. I won't get into it too much. But I will say he also had a desire for cannibalism. So these women came forward. And he was cooked. He was that's it. Done. He's out of the business. His parents, the very wealthy Hammer family from Occidental Petroleum, have cut him off. And I hear that he's working in the Cayman Islands as a timeshare seller. But it has the interviews with these women absolutely chilling. And they knew that they were being treated badly, but they couldn't leave him for some reason. He would call them hundreds of times a day to find out what they were doing and where they were, and made their lives. They were his slaves.
Yeah.
No choice, no end in sight. And apparently this kind of behavior goes back generationally in his family. Now, his cousin, Casey, wrote a book all about it. After this came out, she was not surprised in the least. So it's not a laugh a minute.
From that documentary onto another one on the Lincoln Project, this one I'm keenly interested in because I actually was following the Lincoln Project since their inception.
So was I. Yes.
So watching the whole thing, I'm curious to see it in the documentary now.
Well, yes, they gather these people to bring down Trump. Ex-Republicans, very powerful, smart people. And it's pretty intense. They go to this out-of-the-way center to build their campaign. They literally leave their lives in the past for a long period of time. And they focus only on databases and putting out devastatingly bad ads against Trump. And they carried on for us, you know, people who couldn't vote, but were watching very closely. And of course, for the American future. They were successful, but there were also problems within. So it goes into all of that. But I just hope they're standing by for 2024, just in case.
I think they are. You know, I still follow them on Twitter, all of the original members. And yeah, they are still very determined to save America and keep the democracy there. Last but not least, we only have a few seconds left, but I just wanted to touch on Hello Jack, because that looks like a really, at first I thought it was this campy, like they're making fun of something, but it's a kid show.
No, it's wholesome. It's full of heart. And I think with a little experience, Jack McBrayer from 30 Rock could be the next Mr. Rogers. It's for children. He looks at children and the acts of kindness that they do. He rewards them with a bird feeder kit, and he gets into their hearts. It's just wonderful. I thought, you sap, why are you digging this so much? But I really want it.
Well, because we're starved. We're starved for kindness, and that's what this whole show is about. So really nice. Exactly. And honestly, what does it say about me that at first I thought it was like a sarcastic take? I was waiting for it to get nasty.
Well, me too, Candace. I'm not alone in that. We've been through a really hard time. So, it's been terrible in the world. And Jack McBrayer is my new hero.
Yeah, it's really sweet. So where is Hello Jack, just for people looking?
It's on Apple TV, and I will have my interview with him on the website. So I'm looking forward to doing that.
Wonderful. All right, Anne, thanks so much. We'll see you next week. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Candace. Yahoo!
More of What She Said with Candace Sampson coming up.
Medicinal mushrooms offer a multitude of health benefits, including immune support, improved energy, and stress reduction. Medicinal mushroom extracts from New Roots Herbal are hot water extracted, providing you validated potency so you can get their full health benefits. Discover Reishi, Lion's Mane, or Resilience, a 7-mushroom blend. Find the complete selection of medicinal mushrooms extracts from New Roots Herbal exclusively at quality health food stores. To learn more, visit newrootsherbal.com. To ensure these products are right for you, always read and follow the label.
Welcome back to What She Said with Candace Sampson.
How will you live the second half of your life? That's a question women the world over struggle with at midlife. Jennifer John from the Sacred Space Coaching knows this from personal experience and is committed to helping others struggling to find the answer. She joins me now to discuss. Welcome back to the show, Jennifer.
Hi, Candace. Thank you for having me.
We're talking about aging a lot lately, but midlife in particular is a crisis moment. You know, there's the cliche of the midlife crisis, but it's true. There's a lot of
truth that comes out in that.
There is. I mean, midlife for most people, they want, you know, what's midlife? And really there's some mystique to it until you actually get there and then you realize what it is. But it's those middle years, and it can start as early as your late 30s up until you're into your 60s. And so those are those middle years where you start to you look ahead. And when you're looking ahead, you start to think that there are less years ahead of you than there were behind you. And so that can cause people to have some sort of anxiety. You know, they're creeping into that new chapter of their life with some dread, some, you know, feeling anxious about what lies ahead, and feeling almost as if the best years that they've had are behind them rather than ahead of them.
And it's funny, you know, I've had some conversations with other women who talk about midlife and, you know, they don't realize they were going through a crisis per se until well after the fact, when they're able to reflect on it and say, oh, that crazy behavior was because of midlife.
Right. And so, you know, like I said, how you perceive those middle years really determines whether or not you're going to experience more of a crisis as opposed to a time of greater happiness, greater fulfillment and satisfaction. And so some go into it and feeling, you know, bouts of depression because you're doing a lot of soul searching or reflecting, and they hit this stage where they start to feel regret almost of some of the things, you know, life experiences, are not having the expectations that they had for themselves. They weren't able to fulfill in their lives, you know, at the time that they believed that they were going to get fulfilled, like getting married or buying, you know, the house that they always dreamed of, or, you know, just different milestones that, you know, we have. You know, that we put expectations that we put on ourselves, or that society puts on us, or that we even see in the media. And so not hitting those milestones can cause some to have some sort of regret, which can lead to depression, times of depression, of doubt, of just frustration, and almost a sense of anger of, you know, I'm here now, and what now? You know, like there's nothing better ahead for me. And so that feeds again more into that feeling of going through a crisis.
I have a very close friend who is going through this right now and feels this incredible resentment building in her. And I keep coming back to the conversations we've had over the last year about mindset and how it's so important. For me, I think my midlife crisis, as it were, I was going through a divorce and so on, all these things. I prefer to frame it as a midlife awakening. I feel that I've become a much better person at this stage of my life. How much does mindset play into this time?
Mindset plays in heavily into this time, like anything else, right? How you perceive something going into it pretty much has a very large impact on how you will experience that situation or circumstance. And so the mindset is very key. To have the right sort of mindset of, you know, this is a time of transition for me. This is a time of exploration. This is a time of me just enjoying more, or even, you know, discovering more of myself, as opposed to dreading it. And it also depends on the certain things that you're going through at that time. For some, like, as you mentioned, it's a divorce. For others, it's, you know, aging parents. Some may be sickly. They themselves may be going through a health challenge. And so it sort of frames the way they view those middle years and going into it that really has an impact on what it is that they're going to experience as they go through it.
Right. I mean, again, it's the whole glass half full, half empty thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
What are some tips then, or some tools we can use to shake the negativity that is attached to a midlife crisis or midlife in general?
As you said, one of the important things, again, it goes back to mindset, cultivating the right mindset as you're going into these middle years. Looking at it, said, you know what? When you look back over your life, you've gained so much experience. You have so much wisdom. And now you're better armed to go into this next chapter of your life. So if you embrace that sort of mindset that I have something to contribute, I have value and I can add value, and that what is ahead of me is just as productive, perhaps in a different way, than the years behind me.
We talked about living agelessly.
Yes.
And I think that's an important part of this discussion, because I think when we get to this age, we're watching our physical appearance change
so drastically. We live in a world that's just rich with ageism. So, yes. So what are some of the tools then for living agelessly? I mean, outside of mindset.
Yes.
What can we be chasing to I guess, live fully at this age?
Letting go of expectations. Truly, the expectations that we may have had, you know, in our 20s and 30s may not fit us or suit us now going into our 40s and 50s and whatnot. And so truly letting go of expectations that no longer serve you, right? And embracing ones, more empowering ones for your future, for this time that you're in right now. Youth is something that we're constantly chasing. And, you know, we're constantly wanting to look young and feel young and be vibrant. And our youth is not necessarily just captured in our physical appearance. It's also a mindset. It's also the way that we choose to live our lives and the way that we choose to venture out in things that are ahead of us. And so if we embrace those things, you know, in a new way, with that new perception, we can live more ageously than we've ever lived before. And this latter part, or not, I shouldn't say latter part, but this new part of our lives will be just as fulfilling and satisfying.
I think it's also like shaking some of those things that we're told, like, you know, women over 40 yes. can't wear this and oh. you can't wear that.
Can't wear things above your knees and shouldn't wear eyeliner on the bottom of your eye. You know, there's, oh, and you know, the whole gray hair, you know, situation. And so you're hearing more and more are saying that they're choosing, some are choosing, and it's, you know, every woman has their right and has their right choice to choose whether they want to go fully gray or whether or not they want to continue, you know, dyeing their hair or whatever the case may be. And so, you know, you have that, and that feeds into the feeling of feeling youthful and feeling young and feeling, you know, vibrant. And so definitely there's so much that plays into it, especially with media and society. And so, and I think if we start to distance ourselves from these things and basically not compare ourselves to others, but truly carve out our own path for us. What does aging look for us and how can we do it more gracefully, so that we still hold on to feeling attractive and feeling confident and feeling assured of ourselves and not losing that?
Yeah, I think as important it is to let go of our expectations, it's also important we let go of the weight of other people's expectations
exactly.
on us.
It's so true, because we can get so easily caught up in that and start comparing ourselves and start, you know, thinking that we're not good enough, we don't look good enough, and that feeds into other areas of our lives, our confidence, our assuredness. So yes, we definitely have to start letting go. And again, letting go of these mindsets, letting go of these expectations, these assumptions that are not serving us well.
And all of this ties into getting unstuck. No matter where we are in our life, it's all tied to, we can get stuck in a mindset. We can get stuck with our expectations or other people's expectations. So you help people with a 21-day challenge. How can people join you in that? Because they can jump in anytime. Right?
They can go to Facebook, and on Facebook, just search 21-day challenge. For the sacred space, and you'll find it. And there we have a new challenge, which is living agelessly. And so we welcome it. You're absolutely true, because you can end up sabotaging yourself, not only getting stuck, but sabotaging your own happiness because of the expectations we have, because we haven't learned to be live more free.
Right. It's brilliant. And it sounds like something we should be able to do. But unfortunately, a lot of women get to this age and they just don't know how to turn it from a crisis into, you know, something really happy and joyful. So I hope people will join you on the 21-day challenge. As always, Jennifer, great discussion. Thank you so much for joining me. And you'll be back again next month.
Yes. Thank you so much, Candace. It was wonderful being here with you.
Whether the opponent is a financial hardship, a difficult boss, being in a manipulative relationship, or emerging from a pandemic, my next guest's new book, The Art of Badassery, Unleash Your Mojo with the Wisdom of the Dojo, teaches readers how to flex their mental muscle, how to rise above fears, and how to reclaim their power. Author Jennifer Cassetta is an internationally recognized motivational speaker and health and empowerment coach with a third-degree black belt in Hapkido and a master's degree in nutrition. She joins me now to discuss how to unleash your inner badass. Welcome to What She Said, Jennifer.
Hi, Candace. Thank you so much for having me.
I normally only have Canadian women on my show, but I was approached by your agent and was intrigued with your story. I love it. And so I was sent an advanced copy of the book. I also love the book. What prompted you to write this?
Great question. And first, I just want to acknowledge you and thank you for making me an American exception to the rule. I appreciate it. I'm honored to speak to your audience. I wrote this book because over two decades of teaching self-defense and health and empowerment coaching, I was tired of hearing stories from women of being passed over for deserved promotions and jobs, you know, taken advantage of, manipulated, being in terrible relationships, being in abusive relationships, being verbally, mentally, and even physically assaulted. And I just wanted to help people have a framework to walk through that, to either deal with those types of things in their past and or to build the inner strength it takes to stand up for themselves in the future.
Yeah, I've never really considered taking martial arts in any way, shape, or form. But I have to tell you, I'm intrigued now because I really like the way you translate what it's like to be on the mat and how that works in your real life. So can you give a quick sort of, we don't have lots of time in this, but we do have a podcast that people can go listen to afterwards. But just for the purposes of this interview, can you give sort of the breakdown of what each belt represents in life?
Absolutely. So as a white belt in martial arts, you're a pure beginner, you're getting onto the mat, you're doing things that are completely uncomfortable to you, both physically, mentally, and spiritually. So the first chapter is white belt and embracing the suck and really just becoming more comfortable with uncomfortable things and embracing that sucky things are going to happen in life. No one gets out of this life alive without something or many things that we have to deal with. So that's chapter one. Chapter two is how to bounce back from those things. So there's three strategies I learned, which are how to pivot, roll with the punches, or even make an ultimate comeback when life has knocked you out for the count. The third chapter or belt level is orange belt, which teaches us how to block, and how that translates in life is about setting powerful boundaries, again, verbally, mentally, emotionally. Or green belt is chapter four, which teaches us how to find our spirited yell. A kiap essentially is what we call it in martial arts, but essentially it's your powerful form of communication. And we do that through body language, through tone, and the words that we speak outwardly, and our, more importantly, our inner dialogue. Blue belt level is where we start to become aware of our chi, our energy, and really how to practice radical self-care. And it's not that radical, to be honest. It's just really taking care of ourselves and our bodies and our mental health so we do have the energy to lead our most badass lives. Red belt teaches us to go within and start connecting with our inner warrior, I like to call her, our intuition, our inner guidance, which can help us in so many ways to stay safe, for one, but also just to lead us in the general direction of our badassery. And then black belt level is, of course, is about leadership and becoming a leader in your own quote unquote dojo, right? The people that you surround yourself with, the communities that you're involved with. Leadership is for everyone and anyone who chooses to step into it. It's not reserved for certain types of people. So that's, and then I kind of just close with making sure that we can all take a stand for women and support each other on this wonderful journey of life.
And that is indeed what She Said is all about. I love that you know, that last chapter about leading, and you seem to do that just about everywhere. I've been all over your social media channels, checking you out on YouTube and TikTok and, you know, everywhere. What motivates you? Why are you so invested in seeing women embrace their inner badass?
Oh, gosh, that's a question that's, I'm just like, where do I begin? Again, going through it myself and going, you know, part of the reason I started martial arts to get strong in my body, but then I started to realize
all of these other benefits that I was getting. I was starting to feel more confident. I was starting to feel more grounded, more on purpose, to the point where within that first year, I actually decided to like how I can make this a career or weave this into my career as I go along. So I changed careers completely and made this my life's mission. And again, I think when you really are on purpose like that, you start to connect with people who really could use this message. So the more I took a stand on this, on women's safety and women's equality, the more people showed up that really needed to hear it. So that's essentially it in a nutshell. But also, you know, I had some life-changing experience happen in that first year of my training. So I had to go through it first.
It is a powerful book, and I love, though, it is such an enjoyable read. I can't thank you enough for writing it. I really encourage people to go out and find it. I want people to be able to get the book and keep up with you, because you're also teaching self-defense. You're always giving out great messages on social. So where can people do that?
On Instagram mostly, but also TikTok is Jen Cassetta, two N's, two S's, two T's. My website's jennifercassetta.com, and I'm pretty easy to find.
All right. And the book is available on Amazon.ca and Indigo. Thank you for joining me today, Jennifer.
Thank you so much.
More of What She Said with Candace Sampson coming up.
Is joint pain keeping you from enjoying your favorite activities? Whether it's reducing acute pain and chronic inflammation or rebuilding worn-down cartilage, New Roots Herbal can help. Discover Joint Pain Relief, InflaHeal Plus, and chondroitin glucosamine from New Roots Herbal. Only the highest quality natural ingredients tested for purity and potency in an ISO-accredited lab. Available exclusively at your local health food store. To ensure these products are right for you, always read and follow the label.
Welcome back to What She Said with Candace Sampson.
We are closing out today's show with Vanessa Fakaria, who is half of the rock duo Goodnight Sunrise. You may recognize that name, as she is often on morning TV as the math guru, but she is also an incredible musician with tons of pizzazz, dedicated to speaking to and fixing the issues women and people of color in the music industry face. She joins me today to discuss the story behind the song we're about to play, called One Pill. Welcome to the show, Vanessa.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I've been rocking out to this song all morning, got it on loud on Spotify, and I need to know the story behind it. So tell me.
Well, honestly, it's a classic musician story, I guess. We had been jamming in 2017 in like our dirty jam space, and we just kind of came up with it and we thought, hey, we'll record a voice note. And at the time, there were no lyrics or anything like that. We just kind of had the bare bones of it. And David kept saying, this song is going to be something. We need to revisit it. And I was like, who cares about this demo? Like, I don't know. I'm not seeing it. And then in 2020, we were writing songs for the new album, and David revisited it and he started coming up with the lyrics. You know, we're all just trying to get by, everybody on their own supply. And I was like, David, what? That is ridiculous. But the more we played it, the more it grew on me. And, you know, the song has turned into sort of a, you know, it's kind of about that idea of we are all, whether you're drug of choice is social media, Netflix, alcohol, cigarettes, coffee, validation. We're all kind of just looking for the next thing to validate us, to make us feel better, to give us that endorphin hit. And we have so much trouble just being in the present that we're really at this point where we're so reliant on external sources for happiness. And I think that's kind of what the song is about. When I say it that way, it sounds really dark and creepy, but it is, it's kind of a recognition that like, we're all kind of in the same boat, you know, like we're all kind of just trying to make it in this crazy world, and whatever it takes to get us there, maybe that's okay, you know, or maybe we need therapy, whatever, one or the other.
I have to tell you, like I said, I'm listening to it on repeat. I love this song. I think it reflects perfectly what we're all going through as a society, looking for that one thing that's going to fix us. Uh-huh. You've been busy on tour all summer. You continue to tour this fall. Where are you playing next?
We are playing next in London. We're opening for Mono Wales October 13th at Rum Runners. There's a few tickets left, so make sure you grab those. And then we'll be hitting Hamilton, Windsor, and Lindsay.
Amazing. London, my hometown. That's fantastic. Ooh. Yay. Yeah. So thanks so much for joining me, Vanessa. We're going to close out the show. We're going to play One Pill in its entirety for my audience. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for What She Said this week. Stay up to date with our newsletter by signing up at whatshesaidtalk.com and be sure to follow on social at What She Said Talk on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for videos of these interviews and more. You can also catch me on TikTok at Candace Said. Finally, be sure to subscribe to What She Said with Candace Sampson on Apple and Spotify to catch past episodes and extended podcasts. I'll be back next week.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
It is your favorite girl. That's right, it's the Allie Mars, the one and the only. Everyone else just ain't me. I am the host of Welcome to Mars, a lifestyle podcast where nothing is off the table. I have come a long way from sex and dating and have transformed the new vibe to all things lifestyle. We still talk sex, but I'm more interested in the journey, where people have come from, how they made it, and where they're going. Subscribe or follow to a brand new look and a brand new era. Welcome to Mars.
Subscribe or follow on Apple, Spotify, Google, or at theallymars.com.
Because even with the new look, I'm still that same bitch you love to hate.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.